My guest at this time is Frank Gaffney. He is a former Assistant Secretary of Defense, and he is currently President of the Center for Security Policy. We have turned to him many times for his analysis of developments in the Middle East. And over the past several days, as complicated as the Middle East is, understanding what's happening in Saudi Arabia is perhaps even more baffling than usual. In just the past several days, we've seen the resignation of the Lebanese prime minister. We have seen a quote-unquote corruption roundup by the crown prince in Saudi Arabia, who is also the defense minister. And they've effectively accused Iran of an act of war by sending a missile to their rebel allies in Yemen that was then launched towards the Saudi capital. So that is the very thumbnail sketch. Frank, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with this corruption roundup that included at least one prince, if not more. What is the crown prince up to here?
It seems pretty clearly aimed not so much at dealing with the corrupt officials, because if that were, in fact, the object, I think every single one of them would be rounded up. It's about power. It's about consolidating his hold on it before his father passes from the scene, either voluntarily or the old-fashioned way. And I think he's clearing the decks for action against the principal, increasingly existential threat to the kingdom, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran.
And they're, of course, fighting a proxy war in Yemen, and that is why the Iranians were shipping this missile and possibly others to the Houthi rebels there. Over in Lebanon, on the other side, there's also kind of a power struggle going on. This prime minister that resigned was loyal to the Saudis for the most part. Meanwhile, others in the Lebanese government are cozy with the Shia. That includes Syria, which obviously is in line with Iran. So from the U.S. perspective, is this just a lot of chess pieces moving around, or does this change the way that the dynamics are working in the Middle East and present any either greater threat or different threat to us?
Well, something's moving, for sure. I think it's a lot bigger than chess pieces. I think this is nothing less than tectonic shifts taking place throughout the region. There's been a lot of talk of what the Iranians have been doing, in part with, you know, the resources and the legitimacy that we've conferred upon them in the Obama years, to carve out of a lot of Sunni-held areas what's being called the Shiite Crescent, that extends from basically the mouth of the Red Sea, where it abuts Yemen, all the way up through the Persian Gulf, Iran, of course, to Iraq, through Iraq to Syria, through Syria to Lebanon and the Mediterranean coast. And what the Sunnis, led by the House of Saud and Saudi Arabia, have clearly begun to reckon with is, if they don't do something about this, presumably with the help of the United States, they will be encircled, and this resources on which they rely still very heavily, namely the sale of petroleum, can be cut off at will through the Persian Gulf or through the Red Sea by the Iranians and or their proxies. And so I think what is teeing up, as I see it, is probably a very, very bloody war in that part of the world, and it may not be confined to that part of the world.
So when you say need to deal with this, are you talking about Iranian aggression in general, the nuclear program, a combination thereof? What in particular is the most urgent concern for them?
Well, as I say, I think part of it is they fear there will be a crippling blow to their economy, either because their oil exports are interfered with, or perhaps the Iranians will simply continue and succeed at fostering upheavals in the areas from which the oil is primarily drawn in Saudi Arabia, which tend to be populated by Shiites, not Sunnis. So that's all, you know, an economic slash political problem. But yes, as you say, the Iranians are establishing hegemonic control of large parts of this this very, you know, strategically significant region. And I think they aspire to do more, and they're willing to use everything from terrorism through Shiite militia in Iraq and Syria, through their own Quds force and Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, and I think probably ballistic missiles, perhaps armed with something worse even than conventional weapons, perhaps chemical weapons or biological weapons or even nuclear weapons, to assert the kind of dominion that they believe is their rightful due.
Can Saudi Arabia compete militarily with the Iranians and their allies? Obviously, we would be providing them probably quite a bit in terms of money and materiel, but I don't think there's much of a stomach for bodies for the U.S. to send over there. So can Saudi Arabia and its allies sustain?
It's a great question, and I don't know the answer. I think the Saudis certainly can't do it by themselves. The ability to draw in the Egyptians or perhaps the Jordanians and certainly the United States, at least their power, is, I think, probably their calculation if push does come to shove. They've got an enormous amount of very advanced equipment. They just don't have many people who either have the skills or the will to wield it in defense of the kingdom or, you know, their interests more broadly.
How close do you think we are towards an actual armed conflict here?
Well, there is an armed conflict going on, of course, as you mentioned earlier,
the
proxy war in Yemen, right? But there's also what is happening in terms of Sunnis versus Shiite in Iraq, in Syria, the possibility with the departure of Hariri from Lebanon that there may once again be a civil conflict between Sunnis and Shiites or Sunnis and Shiites and Christians is a distinct possibility in Lebanon. And it could go beyond that. You know, Turkey is a factor in all of this, the central Asian republics beyond. This could get extraordinarily messy, and then it goes without saying that Israel may well be drawn into it, especially if the Iranians' other proxies, Hezbollah, are unleashed or are, you know, sort of brought to bear in combination with forces of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps now taking up position in Syria near the Golan Heights and Israel.
Two quick questions before we let you go, Frank. First of all, are these largely natural forces that were headed towards this anyway, or has American policy in the previous or even previous administrations to that exacerbated this in any way?
Well, I think there are natural animosities that date back to basically the earliest days of Islam that are coloring a lot of this. There's also the rising appetite of Sunnis and Shiites to join forces against the so-called infidels. This is something that they do quite frequently. They'll get back to killing each other, but they'll turn on what they perceive to be a common enemy, and that would, of course, include us. But as to policy, I think there's very little question that with the removal of Saddam Hussein and his army, which I think was the right thing to do in the first case and the wrong thing to do in the second, the principal impediment to Iranian ambitions was removed. And then the damage done during the Bush years in that respect has been greatly compounded by the policy of Barack Obama, as I mentioned, in greatly enhancing the power of the Iranian regime and emboldening it further. So those policies have definitely contributed to what's happening here, but I think there are a lot of other forces that have been at work for over a millennium.
As this develops, Frank, final question. What is the appropriate, in your estimation, American policy, both tactically and rhetorically?
Well, I think fundamentally our interests at the moment lie with trying to deprive the Iranians of their nuclear and other ambitions. And that's going to be vastly harder today than it was before Barack Obama started greatly enabling those ambitions. We will continue to have problems with the Saudis, I'm reasonably sure. This fellow, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince and I think incipient king of Saudi Arabia, is making some noises that are encouraging that he wants to change course and he wants to do something about the kind of support for the jihad that the previous Saudi regimes have represented. But it remains very much to be seen, Greg, as to whether that will in fact eventuate, whether he'll survive for that matter, but certainly whether that will be the ultimate policy of Saudi Arabia. But I think for the moment, our interests lie with stopping the Shiites from achieving the kind of hegemony over the region that they seek.
Never easy to figure out exactly what's going on in the Middle East, but we appreciate very much, Frank, you taking the time to make it a whole lot clearer. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Frank Affney is the president of the Center for Security Policy, also served as an assistant secretary of defense in the Reagan administration. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.